Breakfast Business with Joe Lynham on News Talk.
With Cantor Fitzgerald Ireland, helping people across Ireland invest, plan and grow their wealth with confidence. Cantor Fitzgerald Ireland is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland.
Whether it's crude oil, liquefied natural gas, jet fuel, helium or fertilizer, they all are fossil fuel derived and mostly originate in the part of the Middle East currently at war and blockaded. Our utter dependence on the narrow Strait of Hormuz has been underlined for the past few weeks. But how can we wean ourselves off this area and how do we manage to avoid a very damaging energy crisis? Robert Maxwell is a principal consultant with the energy company DNV Consulting and is on the line. Good morning, Robert.
Good morning.
Robert, let's start with where crude oil is right now. It looks like it's hovering and remaining around $100 per barrel.
Yes, exactly. And it's very hard to believe that we started out this year with actually market sentiment and position overwhelmingly bearish on a fundamental overhang of a couple of million barrels per day with supply exceeding demand globally. This current surge now $100 per barrel, as you say, up about 40 to 45% in just the last 2 weeks with massive intraday volatility of up to $35 per barrel on some days, is primarily a result of this Strait of Hormuz closure, impacting about 18 to 20 million barrels per day, or up to 20% of global supply passing through the strait on any given day into what the IEA, the International Energy Agency, now terms the largest physical supply disruption in history, with about 10 million barrels per day of oil production shut-ins, according to their latest oil market report last week. And that includes Saudi at 2 million barrels per day, roughly and counting, Iraq at about 3 million barrels per day, and then others, including Kuwait, UAE, and Qatar. And then, of course, the often cited savior and spare capacity narrative of 3 to 4 million barrels per day from Saudi and the UAE and others really goes completely out the window due to geography in the Persian Gulf. The reality is that all of this oil and gas needs to travel through the strait to reach global markets. Right now, tankers are unable to travel through due to the Iranian threat of attack, GPS interference, insurance premiums, logistical constraints, etc. And then on top of all of this, the storage tanks in the region are now at capacity. There's reported refinery damages. So really, there's no other option but for producers to at least temporarily shut in their production.
Now, so if the straits were cleared, for whatever reason, by some miracle, they were to be cleared in the next week or so, how long would it take to return to normal or some sort of normalcy in terms of deliveries?
Well, that's the key question. I mean, so right now there is some partial relief, which is important. One is the Saudi Arabian East-West pipeline, 5 million barrels per day towards Yanbu in the Red Sea, and the UAE have a 1.5 million barrels per day pipeline to the Fujairah port, mostly avoiding the Iranian threat. And then the second relief here really is, again, the IEA announcing their largest ever coordinated emergency SPR, 400 million barrels.
Now, when you say SPR, you mean the Strategic Petroleum Reserve?
Exactly. Yeah. 400 million barrels, the largest one in history across 32 member states participating here. However, again, the reality is there is no policy response that can stem this tide. This record SPR, while it's a big headline, the key underlying is the flow rate. How quickly can we get this oil to market? And unfortunately, it doesn't happen overnight. The max sustainable flow rate is just 2 million barrels per day. So taking basic maths, that's roughly 200 days to get it out to global markets versus the same 18 to 20 million barrels per day disruption. So the numbers don't quite stack up in the short term. We're likely to continue to see upward pressure. I think the key question going forward, to your point, is how long will these shut-ins go on and how long will the war persist? For war to end, both sides need to come to the table, and that's yet to be seen. We're likely to see prices continue to increase due to these production losses, far exceeding the temporary workarounds and a lack of any clear plan B. As disruption drags on, every day we're losing more and more production, Joe. Even a ceasefire will take time. Looking from history, for example, previous oil shocks rarely resolve themselves quickly overnight. Look at 1973, 79, 1990, all prolonged periods of elevated prices. And when you look at the market analysts, the bank consensus across the street at the moment, hiking prices $100, $120, even $150 in some cases, bringing a deteriorating economic landscape and demand destruction territory into play on the back of that.
So let's continue with our scenario looking. We looked at whether it would return to normal. You're saying that it would take a while before it would return to normal. Now, if the straits remain blocked for another month or more, what impact would that have on oil-derived products?
Well, it will have a very significant impact. I mean, that's the thing that has, it's very hard to do the scenario planning. How long is this going to go on for? But the reality is, as we mentioned, it's very unlikely when we don't see two sides coming to the table just yet that things can be sorted overnight, and equally that we can have these kind of negotiations take place. I mean, and actually, if anything, it's a reminder and the cost of across the barrel increasing. It's a reminder of the importance of energy security for nations and global electrification investments required to meet net zero. We actually released our own energy transition report last week for the UK and Ireland region, showing a doubling of wind and tripling solar capacity. And I think that we firmly believe that the technology is there in terms of EV uptake, CCS, renewable, sustainable fuels, and that the higher efficiency of electricity systems could lead to a 20 to 40% reduction in average household bills by 2050. So the longer this goes on, I think the more important it is that this transition continues apace.
And yet what we've also noticed, haven't we, Robert, in the last few months, is that demand for electricity is not going down. It's actually soaring because of data center needs for AI and all that stuff. So our demand for energy is huge. And at the moment, fossil fuels still seems to be the main source of energy.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's a stark reminder, I think, in today's climate. We are starting to see, obviously, more of the electrification trends taking place. As I mentioned, the technology is very much there. The numbers are improving, albeit slowly. And I think it's fair to say the last 18 months or so, there have been a number of headwinds there. But we are seeing on the back of this, certainly government rhetoric, especially in the EU, seem to be kind of doubling down on this idea. Again, I guess how long this takes is a different story. But certainly, I think the intent is there. And this geopolitical landscape is certainly a reminder of that, and the risk premiums, the war premiums associated across the industry, whether it's insurance, whether it's tankers, whether it's the energy prices, the underlying energy prices themselves. I think it's a challenging backdrop.
Robert, thanks so much for joining us. That's Robert Maxwell. He's principal consultant with the energy company DNV Consulting.
Breakfast Business with Joe Lynham on News Talk
with Cantor Fitzgerald Ireland. Helping people across Ireland invest, plan and grow their wealth with confidence. Cantor Fitzgerald Ireland is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland.